Welcome to the Rhone Podcast. Rhone is a curated physicians network that supports concierge, DPC, and private practices so they can remain independent without being alone. We believe that the future success of primary care requires membership-based medicine practices to thrive. Hello, I'm Dr. Scott Pope, CEO of Rhone, and I'm glad you found us. I hope you enjoy this latest episode of the Rhone Podcast. Welcome, everyone. We've got another outstanding episode of the Rhone Podcast for you today. My guest is Diana Clark. She's the Chief of Clinical Operations at O'Connor Professional Group. Diana, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Scott. I have been looking forward to talking with your listeners today about O'Connor Professional Group and what we bring to the concierge and behavioral health field. So as a chief of clinical operations, I am probably the most fortunate woman working these days. I get to lead, work next to an incredible group of therapeutic companions, clinical coaches, people who help other families navigate real crisis in moments of turmoil.
So O'Connor Professional Group does a lot on the mental health front. Before we get into more details on that, Diana, you've got such a fascinating background and such great experience. Tell our listeners a little bit more about you. And I'm not even sure how we're going to get this all done in one episode. We might have to have you come back for two or three more to get through all of it. But tell my listeners a little bit more about you and some of your fascinating background.
So I was a labor and employment attorney in my first career iteration. Then I ran a business in the fiber arts. And then I went back and got my master's and in clinical psychology. And once I got my master's, I realized I was not personally suited to be a therapist. I like to offer way too much advice, and I'm really reluctant and bad at letting people come to their own conclusion solutions. So as a coach, as a consultant, I'm ideally positioned to give advice, which is really what we do.
Outstanding. Outstanding. So we're going to focus today, and I'm going to steal your term here. And I told you I was going to steal it. I'm absolutely going to steal it. But our focus is on the confluence of healthcare, both above and below the neck. And what O'Connor Professional Group has been doing, it's interesting that so many of the Rhone practices aren't yet familiar with what you guys do. You're not newbies in this space. You've been at this for
11 years at this point. And we started out with a very small mission, which was to support families and individuals struggling with substance use disorders, recognizing that the very treatments were not leading to the best results. So we set out to try and really change the industry, if the truth be known. We wanted to offer solutions and care that extended beyond that quote unquote 28-day rehab where the real rubber meets the road. So we started out with the mission or the desire to help people with substance use disorders and quickly became known for dealing with more complex than just substance use disorders. And we've expanded our clinical team and our expertise into major mental health, autism spectrum disorder, some of the cognitive deficits that go with aging, as well as just plain old launching and parenting. So we are doing all of the things that we like to think of as above the neck, while the concierge medical teams are doing what's really going on in the organ system below.
Outstanding. And so help my listeners understand a little bit more about O'Connor Professional Group, or OPG, as you guys like to affectionately refer to yourselves. The folks at OPG, are you guys actually mental health providers? Are you the ones actually delivering the care, or are you doing something kind of a little bit different than that?
We are doing something different than that. What the ideal case would be somebody who comes in with a complex issue, might even have a team of professionals involved, a therapist, a psychiatrist, but is not able to gain traction in well-being or in recovery. And we can provide solutions from a few hours a week of coaching with clinically sophisticated, some doctoral level, some master's trained. We're doing coaching but we have all of the clinical degrees of those who are doing therapy. But that is not our mission. Our mission is much more in the day-to-day life. How is somebody functioning? How are they managing their disorder? How are they relating to their spouse? How are they dealing with their kids? So one of the real things that differentiated us in the field initially was that we come at this from a real family perspective. We don't look at the IP, the identified patient, as the client. The family is the client. So that while the IP may get their treatment, what had happened previously was that the family was left wondering, what do I do? My loved one just went to treatment because he was suicidal and had a substance use disorder. And they get swooped off into treatment, and sometimes they go via an intervention, sometimes they go via a hospital court order or guardianship order, but they get swooped off into care. What is the family left with? There is like nuclear fallout that has occurred in that family. Can we drink around them again? How do we mention this? How do I support the other members of my family in understanding what has gone on with one member of the family? So I could talk forever, Scott.
No, you're good. You're good. I really appreciate that. So let's bring it back to, you know, on the concierge medicine side, how do you typically engage with a concierge medicine physician, right? So as they're taking care of their patients, doing a remarkable job, you know, getting out in front of the preventative care situation, and then they have, you know, a family member or a patient of their own that is going through a mental health crisis. How do they engage with you, and what can they expect to get with you as an ally in their corner?
Oh, I love that. I'm going to steal that.
Take that one.
Okay. So the first call is help. We're seeing this symptom. We're seeing this situation. We have lived this over and over again. And we start with a consultation process. We go through, what has your doctor said? Let's talk to the person who's struggling. Let's talk to the other family members. Let's give them a voice in what they're seeing. And then we can help develop a plan. And that plan can really range the gambit, because we do not have a set program or plan for people. We have an individualized, and that's really overused now, but we are looking at somebody's full life. What do they do for work? What is the remainder of their health issues?
Yeah. So much of healthcare is just kind of done in a very cookie cutter fashion. I like to use the analogy that, you know, when you end up with one of these, you know, diagnoses, you just get shoved in a train car, and they just tell you stay on the tracks, and there's going to be a couple stops that you make, but this is your path, right? Just jump in this car and go. And I feel like so much of what you're doing with O'Connor Professional Group is really giving that individual more of a helicopter to kind of elevate up above the landscape and get full visibility into what really is available to them as options, versus just kind of, you know, sliding down the hill in a
of a 28 day. And not to say that 28 day programs aren't appropriate and necessary for some people, but they aren't the only panacea for a big, large problem. And they are a temporary way of basically removing a maladaptive coping strategy without the time in place to develop new ones.
So help my concierge physician listeners to the podcast here, right? As they're going through in their day-to-day, how can they get smarter about asking the right types of questions to really unpack what's going on with an individual patient from a mental health and well-being perspective? What guidance can you give them that they can implement, you know, after listening to this podcast?
Oh, I love to give advice, as I've said. So first of all, we've got to start talking more and more about the real things: alcohol, coping strategies. How are we using sex? How are we using our relationships? How are we engaged? I just read a longevity study that showed that people with healthy marriages have better outcomes than people with low cholesterol if they were going to do a side-by-side. So for a concierge medical team to look at a person in terms of what's going on in their whole life, if their patient has, you know, all their blood work is coming back fine, they're looking good, but you look in their eyes and you see a person who's really struggling, that could be a child of theirs who needs help. And we need to ask those questions, and we need to be able to say, what are you doing to cope with this very, very difficult, busy life that you have? What are your coping strategies? And we, in that, not offer advice as to coping strategies, but we will learn much more. Well, I have a drink when I get home at the end of the day. Does that help?
Yeah.
What does that actually do? To move into that question. And I think the other, you know, I was talking to my own physician, but she's not listening to this. And I gave her a little bit of a business about the question she wasn't asking me. I live in the state of Vermont. Marijuana is legal. Do you smoke marijuana? How much do you drink? What is your sex life like? These are important features in being a human that people are reluctant to ask. And the more we ask, the better our relationships are with people, and particularly if we can ask in humor.
So many of my docs talk about the difference in, you know, traditional fee-for-service primary care settings, and, or I like to call them conveyor belt medicine or hand on the door medicine, you know, and when the docs really get into the notion of having the time to ask the right questions. And in fact, when I get somebody who's kind of unfamiliar with what concierge medicine is and how it's different, I actually give them a short little example. I said, you know, imagine an otherwise healthy 40-year-old man who walks into his physician complaining of back pain, right? The odds that that patient walks out of there 15 minutes later with a prescription for narcotics for his back pain is really high, right? Because that the traditional primary care doc, I've got 15 minutes. I gotta go. Like, I don't have time to unpack this. But in that concierge setting where you've got an hour, and maybe you've got, you know, 3 hours set up over the course of, you know, 2 months, that you can really get into what's going on with that patient. You find out that he's miserable at work. He's got a terrible, you know, relationship with his wife, and he doesn't need a narcotic at all. It's manifesting as physical pain because of the emotional stress that he's under, right? And instead, we can get him to a recruiter to get him a new job. We can get him into marriage counseling. And I didn't write the script for a narcotic. That's the difference between concierge medicine and traditional fee-for-service medicine.
Exactly. When I look at a human, I look at what is their emotional health like? What is their mental health like? Are they managing their diagnosis? What is their physical health like? Are they actually getting exercise, eating well, sleeping? That's just one component of a human. What's their executive health? You know, are they able to work? Are they finding life purposeful? And then the last is relational health. How are they manifesting in their relationships? And do they want to shift those?
Yeah.
And when I think about, you asked me a question just a minute ago, how and why would a concierge medical provider want to get a hold of us? And I think it is when you've done that little bit of digging and you're still seeing somebody struggle with their or a loved one's disorder. Then we are the app referral, because we're going to seek to collaborate with the provider about the physical health and the emotional health and the advice that they are actually giving, with providing coaching, consulting, and therapeutic companion services.
Yeah.
We consider ourselves an arm in that.
Yeah, absolutely. No, an extension of that physician's practice, right? And like I mentioned earlier, really an ally in their corner to make sure that you're not leaving any stone uncovered to getting this patient and the family the support that they need. One of the things that you and I have talked about was the difference between a couple of different scenarios where, you know, there may be an opportunity for a live-in solution for an individual patient. Talk to my listeners a little bit more about what a live-in situation is. And then I'll ask you to unpack on the second part of the question, how that differs from a residential solution.
Okay. So they aren't mutually exclusive. Sometimes we get a call and somebody says, I'm coming out of residential programming, but I'm still going to need support when I get home. I'm going to need somebody who's going to help me work whatever form of well-being and recovery plan I'm developing in my residential program. Because the idea that somebody can go to a residential program and be able to live it in their homes is unrealistic without support. It's not even kind to expect. So therapeutic companions can be that bridge. For some people, it is even when they've had multiple treatments and still can't get traction on their well-being and recovery, we can be the in-the-home, slow way of developing patterns, resources, coping strategies while being supported in that home.
Outstanding. And so talk to me more about the residential solution then, and how does that differ from the live-in, and when would residential be more of an ideal scenario for a patient or a family?
So if somebody is acutely suicidal and keeping them safe in the home is an issue, we would want them to go into a residential program for stabilization or hospitalization. For stabilization purposes. Yeah. And then once they were considered stable, then we would be an alternative. We are not a stabilization in the home program. Residential programming for a young adult who doesn't see himself in his peers might be a really important step to go to a program of young adults struggling with like-minded issues and seeing himself or herself in the population there. And that goes for executives too, though less likely. The higher somebody gets in profile, the higher somebody gets in wealth and in position in their jobs, the less amenable they are to going to a residential program and addressing those for stigma issues, for privacy issues. There are a whole host of issues that concierge doctors would see that would prevent somebody from checking themselves into even the most private of rehabs are still programs of recovery.
So maybe it's a sign of the times that we made it this far into a conversation about mental health, and the word stigma has only just now come out. Maybe we're making a little bit of progress right on the social stigma around mental health and well-being. But I do want to kind of take the opportunity to pivot the conversation away from the patients that these concierge physicians take care of, and maybe come to the elephant in the room and more kind of the social stigma around mental health for physicians. And you have a very personal story. You were the daughter of Dr. Leon Rosenberg, accomplished geneticist who was very vocal about his own mental health and issues on that front. Talk to us a little bit.
Can I brag about him for a minute?
Please.
So he was an accomplished geneticist. He was also dean of Yale Medical School and president of Bristol Myers Squibb Research Division. So he was very, very prominent thinker in the world of medicine. And he had bipolar disorder. And at the age of 65, he tried to take his life and wound up getting ECT. He wound up getting on bipolar medication for the first time in his entire life. Prior to that, he was told by one of the psychiatrists he had consulted, a good psychiatrist, who said, if you come out with having bipolar and get into treatment now, he was 45 at that time, it will impact your career. And while his career did continue to shine, it did impact his family, his not getting treatment. So we did do a movie, a biopic or a stigma bust, as I like to call it, about bipolar disorder and the fact that you can live a very successful life under treatment with bipolar disorder. So he is continuing to seek to, in even after death, to bust stigma for major mental illness.
Yeah. He was I've got the chance. You gave me the honor of doing kind of a pre-screening of that, the video that you're referencing. And the way that everybody in there was so, I think, honest, sincere, and vulnerable with, you know, you had a front row seat to bipolar disorder for a very long time, and watching it manifest and understanding, you know, how to engage, how to stay away. And hide. What do you see are, you know, some of the lasting legacies that, you know, your dad would want these, you know, my concierge medicine physicians to know about their own mental health?
To not ignore it. We can't treat. I think there's a quote, we can't go beyond where we're going ourselves with our patients. And if we are denying ourselves care for our own emotional distress, for our own signs of depression, we are not going to take our patients there.
Yeah.
So physicians, we have to heal ourselves in that regard. Yeah. We have to be open, and we have to say, you know, that sounds like something that can be treated, but not necessarily without another expert opinion. I would suggest you get, just like I would suggest you go see a nephrologist if your kidneys were showing signs of protein in the urine, I'm going to suggest you go see a psychopharmacologist for diagnosis, for treatment of what looks like some symptoms of a disorder.
It's certainly not depression necessarily, but we talk a lot about physician burnout. And there's a little bit of a stigma with this, with concierge medicine, because, you know, when you look at traditional primary care settings where they're managing, you know, 2,000 to 3,000 patients in their panel, that workload in and of itself, on top of all the coding and documentation they have to do to get proper reimbursement, it just can be extremely, extremely overwhelming. And when you move from that perspective into, you know, the traditional concierge medicine practice, where they're managing, you know, 250 patients, but they're also running a business, the lens from the outside is that concierge medicine is a cure for physician burnout. And it creates an even bigger stigma, that you can't be right if you feel burnt out.
I think concierge providers are actually just as at risk for burnout, because they're not just seeing people for 15 minutes. They're carrying the weight of their well-being. When you're seeing somebody for that length of time with the relationship, the on-call nature of the practice, you are carrying the weight of somebody else's well-being. And that can lead to burnout unless we take care of ourselves.
Sure. Yeah. We call a lot of what we do here relationship medicine, right? And when you're building that relationship, it's less transactional, that you're just kind of, you know, writing that script for narcotic, and then he comes back in for a refill, and the, you know, the chiropractor didn't fix it. And yeah, sure, here's more narcotics, and you just kind of, you write it off and go. When you actually get, you know, underneath the covers and realize what's going on, you really carry the weight of those individual lives and that sense of responsibility. Not to mention the fact that you're also an entrepreneur and running a business on the side, and managing books, managing HR issues, and making sure that all the bills are paid and you've got money for taxes. And like, I mean, that it can be.
And you're charging appropriately, and that you are, in fact, a profitable business and not a service industry, you know, not just a nonprofit provider. Those are all real concerns for people who are running their own practices. And in that, you know, most doctors I know don't go to medical school to learn how to run a business. They don't know. They don't gain those skills. They don't gain that understanding of even how to do a simple spreadsheet.
Yeah. Now, I call all of the physicians that are part of Rome purple unicorn fighter pilots, just to articulate how unique and rare they are, that they've got the ability to, you know, master the practice of medicine. They've got the ability to run successful businesses, and they've got, you know, the human skills to be, you know, great people at home, great contributing members of their society, to be humble and know that you're not the smartest person in the room, but that's why you're in the room, so you can learn the answers to the question. Yes. Right. And so Like I feel such a sense of responsibility personally to, you know, bring some of these really important messages to these Purple Unicorn fighter pilots that, you know, here's how to recognize the signs of burnout. Here's things that you can do to get out in front of them before they creep in. But certainly when they creep in, as you've mentioned, you know, and they can quickly lead to other downhill slides. And, you know, depression is certainly one of the things that it can run into, can run into issues with substance use disorders and, you know, seek help for those things.
Definitely. And even just simply loss of joie in what used to be such meaningful, purposeful work. Yeah. That needs, my hope is that all physicians can relocate that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think a lot of them do find that when they make the leap from, you know, traditional practice into their concierge practice. But it's, I think that the important take home that I would want listeners to get from this conversation is that if you do find yourself in a, you know, the signs and symptoms of burnout in your practice, don't suppress them, right? Understand that they're real. And there's nothing wrong with you for feeling that, but let's make sure that we're taking the appropriate steps to remedy it and get out in front of it. Because what you're doing, what you're delivering, you know, the care that you're delivering to these patients is so powerful. And the mark that you leave on individuals' lives, you know, maybe just a 5-minute, you know, comment that you made that can, you know, have a lasting impact for the rest of somebody's life. And these humans need you to be as at the top of your game as you can possibly be. And so be sure to reflect inward and take care of yourself as much as you are taking care of other people as well.
Well said, Scott.
Thank you. Dinah Clark, you've been such a great guest for me today. Before we wrap the episode, any kind of closing remarks for our listeners before we let them go?
I think that for concierge providers, including behavioral health concierge providers, we need to understand that we are a larger network. We don't have to do this alone. And there are people out there who have expertise that we don't possess. And we go to them, we're always seeking, is there a guardianship issue? What kind of lawyer should we get involved? Let's stay a big network.
Outstanding. Dinah Clark, Chief of Clinical Operations with O'Connor Professional Group. Thank you so much for being an awesome guest. I hope you come back and join me again.
I'd love to. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Roan Podcast. If you enjoyed your time here, be sure to subscribe. If you have a story you would like to share on the Roan Podcast, I encourage you to reach out. After all, we are stronger together. Now, I invite you to take a few for you and enjoy 3 minutes of relaxing audio. Be well, my friends.